This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. So welcome to The Coaching Inn. Today, it's my pleasure and my privilege to be in conversation with Helen Saylor from somewhere else in the world. Helen, where are you from?
Well, I am calling you from Connecticut, east coast of the United States.
Great. But that's not where you're from, is it?
Oh, no, I am from France. As you can probably hear, at least some of you recognized my accent. It's hard to get rid of this accent.
Yeah. And you're here to talk about the launch of your new book.
Yes, I am.
Fabulous. Using client feedback in executive coaching. And we have the same publisher, Open University Press.
Yes, yes. I really enjoy getting to know them. And I've had a wonderful experience writing the book with them. And I'm sure it's been the same for you.
Yes, definitely. They're very collaborative, I would say. Yeah, that was great. So I'd love to know your story and why we've never met.
Yes, well, one of the reasons that we may have never met is that I have been a globetrotter for a very long time. So as everybody can hear from my accent, I was born and raised in France and didn't get to learn English until my teenage years. I've been told that after 7 years old, it's almost impossible to get rid of an accent. But anyway, so I started my career in management consulting in France, and I was working for one of these American companies with high emphasis on scientific management. And I enjoyed these years. But then in my early 30s, I'd started a family, and my husband got an opportunity to move to the United States and actually to move to Connecticut. And I thought to myself, I was pregnant with my first child. And I thought to myself, let's give it a try. And so that move was not very successful for me professionally. I was asked to travel, all over the US. And I had my young baby at the time. So it just didn't work for me. And I stopped my career as a management consultant. And at that time was really wondering what I would like to do. And I fell into executive search. So I started my first foray into working with people, working for people in executive search. And that was in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. So we lived... our first stay in the US was for 13 years. And that is during that time that I transitioned from executive search to outplacement. And then one day I fell into coaching. And the reason I fell into coaching was because we had hit the dot-com bubble, remember, way, way a long time ago. We're talking the early 2000s. And my executive search business wasn't doing so well. I had fell into outplacement because some of my clients said to me, you know what, instead of recruiting, we need your help helping people, transition out of our company. So I started.
Yeah.
And these were all small companies, that I was, I had started my own small company and I was partnering with other executive recruiters, and one of them who had made the transition with me to outplacement said, outplacement is fun, but I've heard of something even more fun, which is called coaching, and I've signed up for this course. Would you like to come with me and check it out? And so off we went. It was in Providence, Rhode Island, of all places, and I started my first training program in coaching.
Wow.
And just realized the power of it and never left, never left the practice since. And so that was in 2001. So yeah. I've been, in this business for a while. And so, a lot of stuff happened. I build, I want to say a pretty successful a one-on-one coaching practice. And when all was selling, one day my husband says, I've got an opportunity to move to Southeast Asia. And so at that time, and this is 2008, and I'm thinking, you know, we've got two very young teenagers at the time. And I'm thinking, okay, let's give it a try. And off we go to Kuala Lumpur. So this is 2009. We're moving to Kuala Lumpur. And then I mean, professionally, coaching was just emerging at the time in Southeast Asia. But I had a blast, complete blast. You know, imagine a brand new market, lots of people eager to learn. I started to travel like crazy, worked in, of course, Malaysia, worked in Indonesia, China, Singapore, and really working on, women leadership coaching, high potential coaching, branching out, looking at group coaching, which is something I'd never done before. And so absolutely exhilarating. Had a lot of fun with that. And then, so that again, you start seeking the narrative. One day my husband tells me, okay, I've got an opportunity to work in England. And like, that sounds like fun. I've been doing coaching in a while. I want to step back and I'm going to apply to the doctorate of coaching and mentoring in Oxford Brookes.
Yeah.
And that's what I did. So off we go. So this is 2015. Off we go to England. And then I did my doctorate in coaching and decided to focus on that topic of client feedback. And then, of course, moving again. And that was as soon as I finished my doctorate, my husband had decided to retire. So I'm like, okay, let's go back home, quote unquote. And we went back to our house in Connecticut. And that's where we've been for the last 2 years. So that's probably why you haven't really had the time to meet me. Because I was very busy in England working on my doctorate.
So I'm sure. I'm really particularly interested, Helene, because there's something for me that so often we deal in coaching with self-reported data. And so we say that reflective practice is that I reflect on my own practice, but there's no real observable data from anybody else. And I think there's also something for me about we can get into an echo chamber and I can say, actually, I can look out for really excellent coaching by watching coaches coach, but actually, it's about watching clients, or what I would call thinkers, think, isn't it? So it's all a bit upside down. So I'm very inspired by you absolutely going straight in to what I perceive to be a real issue.
Yes. I mean, I love that you bring up this up, because for me, all these years I was doing coaching, I really was looking for feedback. You know, yeah. I was always looking for feedback. And so everything I could get, I got. You know, I got myself a supervisor. I even got trained in supervision to understand also how I could be a better supervisee. I was always, whenever there was an offer to do peer coaching, I took it. I was constantly, trying to do some exams, you know, especially I went through all the ICF process to become an MCC. So I was always trying to get feedback. And the one area where I got really frustrated actually was client feedback. Because if you think of it, so I was working for large organizations and sometimes through agencies. And agencies, they like to request feedback. The type of feedback you get is at the end of an engagement. So when everything is said and done, you get a nice sheet of paper and that says, on a scale of 1 to 5, how much did you enjoy the coaching? And so, you know, when you got a 5, you were super happy. Sometimes you got a 2. Like, oh, you know, what is going on? But so what it measured, obviously, was the satisfaction of the client, which is a great thing. But we know from research, and we can get a little bit more into this later, that it's not actually the best way to measure the effectiveness of coaching, right?
Yes, because if I like you, I'll score you 5, even if it actually hasn't had any impact.
And if right. And even worse, you know, if you have a pleasant conversation with someone, very pleasant, everything sailing, and you're going to give that person a 5, it was a great conversation, but learning is not a pleasant experience. No. It's actually, you know, sometimes it can be, but when you're hit with something that you didn't know, or you want to stretch yourself, it's not always pleasant. So a lot of researchers have said actually satisfaction is a very poor measure of coaching effectiveness. It's a measure, but it's absolutely incomplete. And also the problem with satisfaction is that you don't know as a coach what you did that worked for the client. So you're left with something that's over and you can't really reflect on it. So that's why, you know, I was always frustrated with the way client feedback was communicated to me as a coach. And that's why I wanted to work on this topic.
Yeah, I call that happy sheets.
Yes, I learned that terminology when I first presented my topic. Somebody said, oh yeah, you want to talk about the happy sheets. And great idea, because, you know, really, we're all frustrated about this.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it? And I often say to, when I start training leaders to use coaching, I say to them, you know, you're going to find this very uncomfortable, because you're going to get feedback about what you actually do in the room. And the feedback you've probably got through your career is when people like you, they say it was great. And when they don't like it, they tell somebody else. But that doesn't mean that one was great and one wasn't. It's to do with happiness.
Yeah.
So what are the real key learnings, Helene, without giving me the whole content of your book? Because, of course, we want people to read it. But what are the headlines of the learning for you?
Well, I want to say one thing that I bumped into very early on was, okay, well, you know, yes, it's great conceptually to get feedback from the client, but how interesting is it? Because actually, if the feedback of the client is the same as the internal feedback, so your own self-reflection, or if it's the same as, say, an observer. So for example, you're going through MCC accreditation with the ICF and there's people, you know, telling you how it went. So what's the point? And so that was one of the questions, you know, I was asked early on. And then I discovered, actually, there's been a lot of research about this. The client sees and experiences the coaching very differently from the coach, and especially the observer. And so there's a scholar and I think teacher called Eric Dehaan, and he has done a lot of surveys trying to compare what were important moments for the client, the coach, and the observer. And he found out they were completely different moments. And they were even, for a particular moment, different appraisals. So for example, an observer would say, this was a very poor question. And then the client would say, it was the question that actually triggered that insight for me. So that was for me the okay for a reason. So if I were to say, what was the most important learning for me initially was, okay, I'm doing this and it makes sense. You see what I mean?
That's amazing. Because one of the things that I think is, I think we look in the wrong place. So one of the things that I notice is that if you put an observer in a group with a coach and a thinker, the observer will watch the coach. But actually, they need to be watching the thinker. Because, as you say, a very impressive or a very poor question, actually, it's about the impact. And I'm paying a lot of learning attention at the moment to what happens in the space between the coach and the thinker in relation to the thinker picking it up or giving it back or doing their own processing. And I think that we When I demonstrate coaching to coaches in on their coaching journey, I say to them, it's not about what I do. It's about what happens. And I think we're so looking in the wrong place when we're the external observer.
Absolutely. We do. And that's why I think actually the power of client feedback is probably it's most productive when you talk about it with, for example, a supervisor. Yeah. So I'm going to give a little webinar on that to the Asia Pacific community of supervisors, I think in the early fall, and that's one of the chapters in my book where I say, okay, how can you use this in supervision? Because that's where it becomes the most powerful. You collect during the coaching session. So in the book, there's a number of behaviors that I've studied that make sense to ask the client about, because these are behaviors that the client can actually see, experience, or hear, and get that data and then bring it to, of course, self-reflective practice, but even more excitedly to someone else and say, okay, I did these behaviors and actually this is the impact that my coaching session had on my client. And I think that's important, because when you think about feedback, I spent an entire chapter on that, is to explain, what are we talking about? There are two kinds of feedback, right? There's what we call the summative feedback, which, satisfaction is actually a sort of summative feedback, it's fine. But there's more important summative feedback, such as the generation of new insights, for example.
Yeah.
It's a huge, And then also the quality of the working alliance, the bond, and the level of flow or agreement, between the client and the coach. So what I did study was how coaching behaviors actually relate to the generation of insight and to the strengthening of the working alliance. So in my feedback process, I asked the client not just to what extent I did certain behaviors, but also to what extent did you build the working alliance or strengthened it? And to what extent did you get some insights?
Good.
And so that's a combination of everything. Yeah. That leads you to think. Because if I were just to ask about behaviors, well, maybe I did the behaviors by the book today, but maybe they didn't have any impact. So that's a problem. So I need both. I need both the formative and the summative feedback. And it's when they come together that you actually can have a productive self-reflection or supervision session or peer coaching session.
I so love that, Helen, because one of the things that I notice is that you can follow all of the ICF competencies for coaching. And at the end of the conversation, the insights were all had by the coach. So the coach knows lots of things they didn't know before, but the client doesn't know anything about their own stuff that they didn't know before at all. So it can look like amazing coaching. But if the purpose of coaching is about the impact it has in the client or in the thinker, then we are so looking in the wrong place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. When I was doing all that research about impact, so I discovered something that, at least in my data, I was a little bit counterintuitive, which was that I measured, the extent to which the clients had reached their goals. Because we always think of coaching it's goal-oriented and clients need to reach certain goals. Well, at least in my study, the coaching behaviors did not have a significant impact on whether or not the client had reached their goals. It had a huge impact on the level of insight of the client, but what the client made of the insights was something else altogether. There were other things. I'm not saying maybe the coach had part in it, but it was mostly a client-driven thing. And I was a little bit perturbed by that. I'm like, oh my God, maybe there's something wrong with my data, until I came across some more literature that says, We all think about the coach as a babysitter for the client. You know, you said you had a couple of insights about goals, and then did you actually reach the goals? You know, did you do this? Did you do that? And it turns out, at least from my research, some of the research I've read is that the coach does probably help the client start the process. So they'll get some insight, they'll set goals, but whether or not they achieve the goals has very little to do with the coach. It's really something that happens, you know, afterwards. And so that was interesting for me, because we tend to so much think, oh, you know, you've got to coach to the goal. You've really got to push the client to you know, set goals, but also reach their goals. It's your job. And suddenly I thought, you know what? These behaviors that are so important for the client, they are not the behavior that are, okay, you know, did you do X goal, you know, 3 times a week, like you said you would? I mean, there are coaches who actually do that. You know, they use WhatsApp and they say, you know, did you actually meditate 15 minutes at the start of every day? Because if you didn't, you know, that sort of thing. And so that is one of the learnings I got from reflecting about feedback, is that, you know, that's not the sort of feedback that's going to advance the power of coaching.
No, it's going to create dependency.
Yeah.
And people don't grow when they're dependent, do they? I love what you're saying, though, because you have researched what I have experienced. So it feels as though we're coming together with some stuff. So one of the things that I say in my book is that the best insights happen after the coaching is over, as long as we end well. And actually ending a conversation well is about being clear that we're not dependent and that I'm not going to check up on you.
Yeah.
Really interesting stuff, Hélène.
Yeah. And, you know, the other thing that I learned, because you were actually asking that question earlier, was, you know, when I started my research, I really wanted the client to define which behaviors we were going to work on. Because I was going to, you know, study whether or not a number of coaching behaviors were linked to some coaching outcomes. But I didn't want to take the ICF list, because the ICF list has been made using a very valid approach. It's the expertise approach, where you put a bunch of experts together and these experts talk and they're like, okay, what do you think? What do you think? And they come up with a list. That's how the ICF list has been built. It makes perfect sense, because they're coming from what we call a positivist ontology, right? So, which is, you know, we believe in expertise and the truth is in the hands of the experts, because they've studied for so many years. It's perfectly a valid way to think about science. It makes perfect sense. Anyways, but I'm like, okay, that's good, but I don't want to use that list. So I started to compile an enormous amount of lists, because there are so many people have made lists of effective coaching behaviors. And then I asked the clients, so I ran about 5 or 6 focus groups, and it was a lot of fun. So focus groups of, you know, up to 12 experienced clients of coaching. And I had narrowed down the list to 90 behaviors.
Wow.
And I told them, okay, let's look at this and tell me the one that you think are the most important. And also, if they are not phrased in the right way, you are free to change them, and you are also free to invent some new ones. One of the things I discovered is that clients don't like the coach to tell them what they should be thinking about. So I just want to give a very precise example.
Good.
So one of the behaviors I had was, I asked the client to explore unintended consequences of their actions. Okay, makes perfect sense. But they say, doesn't work. If I don't want to think about my unintended consequences of my action, it's my right. So the way we should phrase the behavior is, I invited you, not I asked you, I invited you to explore, and then I can take that invitation or not. And so what I realized is they were changing these behaviors as if to tell me, we want to be part of the process. We just don't want to be fed certain questions. We want to be invited to think about certain things.
Yeah. And that's about tone, isn't it? So I did a podcast a few weeks ago with Stuart Reed, who does improv. And we were talking about the difference between an offer or an invitation and an instruction. And for me, tone matters, because I think that great coaching comes from the client or the thinker feeling perfectly able to go, I don't like that question. It's not moving me forwards. But I think often we coaches get into the art of great questioning and ask long, beautifully grammatic, amazingly looking questions that don't quite hit the mark.
Yeah.
And average questions, I would say, or poor questions, as you said earlier, often give far more insight, which raises all sorts of questions about credentialing, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, that being said, you know, for me, it's a little bit like, when you think of a psychometric or a 360, it's just an invitation. You don't want to take it for, you know, granted and say, okay, I'm going to put you in a box, but it's just a way to start a conversation. So I think if both the coach and the client get in their eyes wide open, now I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions. It so happens I've learned these questions, but you are welcome to challenge me and offer me, say, you know what? I like part two of this question. I'm only going to answer part two. And so it's an invitation to make the client more of an agent of the process, which required me to think and think, okay, we tend to live in that expertise sort of world view. When we coach, we come in as an expert of the process, right? And they say, you know, you will be a good coach if you let go of the substance, so you don't give advice, you know, things like that, but you are the master of the process. And what my research confirmed was that we are the master of nothing. We are not the master of the substance, for sure. We're not the master of the substance. I mean, come on, if you think about it, our clients are very resourceful people. A lot of them actually coach already, right? And so it would be very strange to put yourself on a pedestal and say, well, I'm the expert of the questions. And I think that's the tiny problem with credentialing, because it sort of make you think, oh, you know, maybe if there's one thing we're experts of is a container, how to start, how to end, maybe, yes. Make sure we end off time, on time. It sounds very silly, but so many coaches don't even know how to end on time. It's a 1 hour session, you end at the top of the hour. I think that's an important skill, way more important than learning and memorizing 25 questions.
Oh, thank you. I agree. The master of nothing. I like that. Because, I think that we're simply a companion in somebody else's thinking process. And we keep them company while they're thinking. But I think there's that whole thing, isn't there, about power and partnership and who has the power and who gives it and who takes it. How interesting. So, Helene, how do people find your book?
Well, it's interesting you ask that question. So these are very early days, but I can tell you of some of the pushback I've had a little bit, because, this book was made after I wrote my doctoral thesis. And while I was writing my thesis and while I was writing my book, this was pre-COVID. So I was lucky. I was able to go to some conferences and my book. And I think one of the things that people actually liked, before saying what people don't like, that's my French way. We like to be negative all the time, you know, but let's be positive first. So what people really liked about my model and my book was this idea that it gives really some data to the coach to develop themselves. An additional, so that they really like that, or things we talked about earlier about, you know, the client has something to say. And so if you can capture that data, that's really good. So that's going to help you be a better coach. But on another end, there was some pushback about, you know, who are we if we're no longer an expert, right? So that was big, you know, and also linked to that, that fear of getting negative feedback.
Yeah.
You know, that fear of a client telling you, well, not only you executed these behaviors, or you didn't execute these behaviors that are supposed to be effective, but also I'm sorry to say that your impact was weak. And because the coach tends to carry the responsibility, right? Mm-hmm. And they tend to think, oh, whether or not a coaching session is successful has all to do with me. Whereas we know, I mean, even, you know, it was first observed in psychotherapy, but then it's been shown also in coaching. The success of coaching, the coach may have no more than 30%. 70% is owned by the client and various extraneous things. And so to think you're solely responsible for the success of coaching, and so people panic. So if they're going to give me negative feedback, oh my God, you know, and I'm thinking, no, on the contrary, it's an opportunity to say to the clients, well, it appears that, you know, I did what I could. And so, but what did you do as a client? And what if coaching was actually helping the client do what they need to do? Because sometimes, you know, we're so basking into our own expertise that we forget that we've got to challenge the client to do what they need to do in order to make the coaching successful. So that's how we had that conversation. The other big pushback I got was about the goals, right? The panic that suddenly actually the coach was not that instrumental in the fact that the client was reaching or not reaching their goals. They were like, so then what is coaching about? It's not about goal. So that was the other thing. And
it's not about goals, and it's not about us.
Right, exactly. and of course, another big question for coaches is, well, how do I make it work? Because it's not easy to ask feedback to a client during a coaching session, right? Or at least it seems difficult. But what I've found, you know, by using it myself and having a few coaches, before I published a book, I had asked a few coaches to try and experiment with me, you know, with the feedback instrument, that it actually fosters fantastic conversation. Because what you do is that you start the coaching session by asking questions to your client about the level of insight they got from the previous session, the level of bonding and working alliance that happened in the previous session. And if the client said very little or a lot, then obviously the next question is, what happened? So you can imagine what you learn, right? And then when you ask client about, you know, to what extent did I do such and such behavior? And the client said, you did it to a very little extent. And now we think, well, maybe that was right. And it helps both of the client and the coach think further. So allocating 10 minutes or sometimes 5 minutes of your session from time to time, not all the time, to check in about these coaching behaviors actually helps both the client and the coach.
Because you're not actually saying, was I any good today? You're actually saying, is the process serving you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, I ask in the middle of a conversation, I'll often say, and what insights have you had? And I'll be looking and listening, and you can see if they haven't had any, but then that makes it easy. So what do we need to do in the next 30 minutes so you get some insights? Boom, off you go.
Exactly. Right.
Oh, this is great.
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't reinvent the wheel there. It's been done in psychotherapy. where there are instruments where, you know, you start a psychotherapy session with a survey about the level of the working alliance with the patient. And so that I've started to emulate that. And I said, you know, we're starting this coaching conversation, my client and I asked the client, how are we doing with our working alliance? Because it needs to be super strong. You know, it's a conduit. Huh? So that's also another thing I measured in my research. I revalidated it. I'd been done before that the working alliance is a conduit. So without the working alliance, you cannot have has powerful insights. You can have some, but you lose some effectiveness. Mm. You really got to have that working alliance. So measuring it at the start of the coaching session makes sense because you're like, okay, well, what do we need to do to up it a little? Because the more, you know, we work together, the better we are going to help you generate insights.
So Helene, how do people make contact with you if they want to pick up the conversation?
So I think the best way is definitely, I would say, to invite me on LinkedIn. I'm easily found there, Helene Seiler, and you can just invite me, send me a message, and we can pick up from there.
Fabulous. Thank you. And the book is called Using Client Feedback in Executive Coaching, Improving Reflective Practice by Helene Seiler, and it's published by Open University Press.
Yes, and it can be found on Amazon, UK, and also US. So you don't have to pay extra fees, you know, shipping fees or whatever. So, but I'd love to hear more, you know, from everyone who's interested in the topic and continue the conversation.
Well, thank you so much, Helene. What a pleasure it has been to meet you.
Well, same here.
So I'm Claire Pedrick, MCC, and I've been in conversation with Helene Seiler, MCC. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, we hope that you can join me for drinks at the Coaching Inn to launch 3D Coaching's book group, where we're going to be reading Simplifying Coaching. Wherever you are in the world, you're welcome to bring your coffee or your beer. I'll be sharing the story behind the book and answering your questions. Find out more about our book group that will be launched on the 5th of May through any of our social media channels, through LinkedIn, 3D Coaching, Twitter, at 3D Claire, or Facebook, 3D Coaching. Hope to see you there.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com/b-developed.